Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association here on 720 WGN. Thanks so much for joining us here on this Saturday evening. Our guest, Jeffrey Colwin. I can help you out with those headphones during the break, Jeffrey. You don't need them right now.
I think I got it.
We spent time talking the entire break, and I didn't get them prepped for the segment. I've been eating the cookies you brought in. Where'd you get these, Jeff?
Those cookies are from Sweet Mandy Bees in Lincoln Park. Have you ever been?
Oh, yes. They do great work. But do they have these as like a preset? They have the scales of justice on one cookie and the gavel on the other. Is this a preset they have, or did you have to order these special for us, Jeff?
I ordered them special for you.
Thank you. And Iridian.
And Iridian, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Jeffrey Colwin, you do a lot of employment law. You know, we also be talking about privacy rights and from Colwin, Mashapinto, and Colwin. And we were talking in the break about, and boy, this is an ongoing topic, the power the American worker has right now. Not universally, but in many, many industries, they are really in the driver's seat. And that mixed with COVID and all these new rules and regulations, vaccines, yay, nay, mask, whatever, it must be a fascinating time to be someone who really focuses on employment law.
It is interesting, John. I think what you're seeing is a realignment of resources. You have employers who are valuing good work from employees, and employees all of a sudden have choices about where they want to work.
Mm-hmm. I wondered if, you know, obviously at any point, I think employees should be aware of their rights and know when their employer is overstepping, whether it's a privacy law, non-disclosure agreements like we'll talk about later on, or any workplace violation. But now, maybe more than ever, I think every employee should really take stock of the way their employer treats them and know their rights now, especially because it's a little easier to walk now.
Well, you have options. I think maybe in other job markets you did not. And I think the takeaway from all of that is that employees need to make sure that they look out for themselves. They need to know what their rights are before they enter into the employment relationship, before it's too late.
Do you see a lot more business or people coming in just with complaints or claims over the last few years as more and more workers start to realize what those rights are?
I think that the raising of awareness of employee rights does alert people to the fact that they've got an issue or a concern at work.
Mm-hmm.
I think employers also are a little more sensitive to that issue, and maybe that helps balance things out.
What do you mean they're more sensitive to it, that they are aware that the employee knows their rights now and they really try and be be legally in line with what they're supposed to be doing?
I think so. I think there's a reason to discuss it. And I think it separates some employers from others. And I think that an employee who is advised of their rights and enters into an employment relationship with their eyes open generally will have a better experience than the other way around.
For sure. All right, let's dive into some things here, these really interesting stories, and one here out of Illinois about workers' privacy rights as it relates to their biometric data. First of all, what sorts of employers collect biometric data, and what sort of biometric data are we talking about here, Jeff?
In today's environment, more and more employers are collecting biometric data. Do you know what biometric data is?
I assume fingerprints is one thing, right?
Yes, there's physiological characteristics like fingerprints and your face and your hand. There's also behavioral biometric data, such as your gestures or your typing rhythm or even the way that you walk.
Wait, are employers are collecting this data on us?
There are programs that allow employers to monitor employees remotely based on if they're using their computer, how long has it been since they moved their mouse, things like that.
Are you kidding me?
I wish I was, but I am not.
How often I move my mouse or how fast I'm typing. Now, what sort of disclosure does an employer have to give an employee here in Illinois that sort of data is being collected?
There's a law here in Illinois. It's called the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act, and it was enacted in 2008, and it's actually one of the toughest laws in Illinois concerning the protection of biometric data. And generally, under the law, an employer's required to get informed consent before they start collecting biometric data. They're required to keep biometric data in a particularly safe way. And most importantly, they're prohibited from profiting off of that biometric data.
So selling it to a third party that would want to use it for data gathering or something along those lines and have it be tied either to a specific person or even generally speaking about how people perform in an office space.
Sure.
So informed consent, what does that mean?
Informed consent is notice in writing that this information is being collected, what will be done with it, and how it's protected.
And consent would imply that the person has to say yes, although they can't. Can they tie it to your employment status, meaning that if you don't want to agree to it, they do have the right to dismiss you?
Now, we've talked about this a few times. We live in an at-will state, which means that the employers set the rules. I think the key thing about the law is that it requires employers to notify employees that this information is being collected and to treat it a particular way.
If someone feels like they're, by the way, I don't know how you'd find out that your company wasn't doing things properly. I guess number one would be you find out from a coworker, hey, they're recording you, and you never heard about it. Is that immediately something that's findable against the company or you can collect damages on? Or do you have to show, hey, I've been harmed by some way by my employer? What's the navigation for that in the court system?
The law was enacted in 2008. And everything was pretty quiet with the law until 2015, when the Supreme Court ruled that an employee has a cause of action under the statute, even if they don't suffer actual harm. What you're talking about, mm-hmm. a fine, I believe it's $1,000 or $5,000 for a willful violation of the Biometric Privacy Act. And so that's what's being litigated here in Illinois right now. Can an employee bring a cause of action for the violation of their biometric privacy rights? Typically, what happens is that employers start using these devices, fingerprint scans for time clocks and things of that nature, before they get the implied consent. And that's where employers seem to be getting tripped up.
In fact, one of the cases in this Rosenbach versus Six Flags had to do with that. It was the fingerprint sign-in, right?
Exactly.
And what was the suit about? The fact that they had sold the data, or allegedly had sold the data, or was it about just the general disclosure of that information?
The lawsuit was essentially about the fact that to get into Great America, you had to give a biometric identifier, and there was no informed consent. The plaintiff sued in a class action lawsuit because Six Flags was violating the statute. And the defense to the case was that the employees didn't suffer any actual harm. They weren't mm-hmm. damaged by the fact that they were giving up this biometric data. And the Supreme Court ruled that you don't need actual harm to have a cause of action under the statute. I think that after that ruling, there were something like 150 cases filed in the few months following the ruling, more than had been filed in the 10 years before that Supreme Court case.
So if someone feels like they've given up biometric data or has a hunch that it's being used the wrong way, and they were never informed about all this, should they be reaching out to their HR department first? Or is that like someone they should be calling you immediately?
I would say that if you're giving up biometric information and you have not been provided with informed consent, you should consider calling a lawyer.
And where can we reach you if someone's stepping out of the car or they're heading out and they can't listen to the rest of our segment? We're going to be on with Jeff until at least 7:30. Where can they reach you guys at?
Sure. They can find us on social. They can find me on social media, or you can call me direct. 312-374-5305.
Do you have cookies for everyone when they come into the office? You might have to start doing that here.
Well, I'm glad you like them. Only for you, John.
Very good. Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll get to more, including I'm just blown away at how many people have Ring doorbell cams, nanny cams. Maybe they have cams and they have an Airbnb. And you really have to be careful, both as the person that has the camera and also as someone walking into those situations, knowing or not knowing whether there are cameras. We're going to talk about privacy rights after this. And we also want to take your phone calls, 312-981-7200. If it's something about employment law, if it's something about privacy, anything that you've heard us talking about so far, 312-981-7200. Love to dive in more here with Jeffrey Colwin after this on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We are joined by leading employment attorney Jeffrey Colwin from Colwin, Mashapinto & Colwin, and we're talking about privacy rights now, including doorbell cameras. This is fascinating. Now, this is out of the UK, so you'll have to help us out a little bit, Jeff, with rules here in Illinois or in the U.S., but a judge of the United Kingdom has ruled that a man infringed on his neighbor's privacy by using an Amazon Ring doorbell without prior consent. Now, according to The Guardian, he had installed Ring doorbell cameras on the front of his home, where a lot of people have them, and another one facing the side yard to help deter burglars after a string of car break-ins. So I can understand that, right? You're like, all right, I want them all over the house. Well, his neighbor, he didn't tell his neighbor, and the neighbor was alarmed and appalled, realizing that he had recordings featuring her and her voice, and of course, go right to his smartphone. So eventually he had to pay fines of like 100,000 pounds, like $137,000 is the ruling. So what is the laws here in Illinois in terms of doorbell cams, where they're facing, and who you have to let know? I know that's a broad question.
No problem. These doorbell cams are everywhere.
Yeah.
John, I think there were something like 3 million of them sold in 2020, and the market for them is expected to grow by 20% this year.
And they've solved crimes, too. Like, there have been good uses for them, and people catch people stealing packages. I get the appeal of them. But what about the law about it?
The law is pretty clear on doorbell cameras. The case that you're talking about was fascinating out of England. They have a law that says that if you're going to use a Ring doorbell camera, you have to consult with your neighbor and let them know. Mm-hmm. It's like a form of consent.
Right.
We don't have that law here in Illinois. And when you're outside, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy because you're out in public.
Even in your yard. Because that's kind of private property, right? Like the side of a house or something.
So this is the interesting thing about that case. You know, you have a choice about where you direct that camera. Are you directing it into your neighbor's yard? But the thing that I think is really fascinating about it is that these Ring cameras can record audio. And they record audio up to about 30 feet. And in Illinois, we have a law called the eavesdropping statute that prevents people from listening in to private conversations via audio. So maybe it doesn't matter so much if your house is set back and you've got a lot of distance between the sidewalk and your front door, maybe more than 30 feet. You're not going to catch those conversations. But here in Chicago, if you're walking around the block, those doorbell cameras are right out on the sidewalk. And I don't know about you, but I've had some private conversations walking around on a sidewalk that I wouldn't want to get recorded.
Yeah.
And I think that people just need to be mindful of those obligations and be careful about what they record.
And I have a very loud voice, so I don't think 30 feet even covers me. I'm sure 70 feet Ring doorbells. People all over my neighborhood are probably like, this Hanson is just yapping. I want to just make sure I got this right. So the visual of you outside, that's fine because you don't have that right to privacy. But the audio of what you're saying, you do expect a right to that private conversation. So obviously, for the most part, these video files get deleted, right? But so what's someone supposed to do? I mean, what's the safe practice in a practical sense? Don't publish what you hear. If you overhear a conversation, you hear it. Don't put it anywhere. Just delete it. Or is it like, no, you need to change the settings on your camera so that nothing would ever happen and it would never come to court or anything like that?
I think in an ideal world, you'd want to adjust those settings so you don't inadvertently capture conversations that aren't meant.
Because even the capturing of it is illegal then.
If you intend to capture that conversation, it's illegal. It has to be surreptitious.
Okay.
So if you do it inadvertently or accidentally, that's probably a pretty good defense.
Okay.
What you wouldn't want to do is sit on your couch and turn it on and try to record people as they walk by you, because that's a little bit close to the line.
Yeah.
I think the safe practice is, if you have these types of cameras, to protect your own privacy. What you want to do is delete the recordings as soon as you can.
Right. And if you don't need it, which most of the time it's recording all that, you really don't need it. And go ahead and delete that for sure. Let's talk about nanny cams. A really interesting case out of Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court kind of providing clarity on what nannies should expect when they enter a home. And obviously this is a Pennsylvania case, so help us provide the context here for Illinois. But basically the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, hey, look, it's even called a nanny cam. They're everywhere. So the expectation should be that if you are working in someone else's home, that, yeah, there's a chance that you're going to be recorded. Am I interpreting what their ruling was, essentially?
Exactly. You know, if you have a nanny at your house, you're an employer. You're operating a workplace. And it is legal for household employers to install a hidden camera to monitor what's happening in the home for safety reasons. It's legal in Illinois to put a nanny cam in a nursing home with knowledge and with consent for safety reason. Again, it's the audio recording that causes a problem sometimes. And of course, you can't put these cameras in spaces that are meant to be private, like a bathroom or a bedroom, things of that nature.
You mentioned a hidden camera. I just want to make sure that that was correct. Do you have to tell the nanny in Illinois that there's a camera in the house before they start working?
I would think that advising the nanny that you have a camera is the best policy.
Right.
You know, knowledge, consent, notice, that's generally the way to fix privacy violations.
But if you capture him or her bad-mouthing you via audio and you fire that person because of the audio you captured of them, that would be considered wrong, right? Because as you said, they're not supposed to record the audio of that situation.
Not supposed to record the audio without notice and consent. So the video is fine. I think the audio could be problematic.
Sometimes the audio is the juicy stuff. That's what you really want. When you see him or her walking on the phone, talking, I'm like, what are they saying about me? No, don't do that. Do not record the audio. Interesting stuff. I imagine, Jeffrey, as the technology changes and advances so much, privacy law is really being written on a whim quickly, sometimes even behind the technology. In fact, probably most of the time, well behind the technology. And then as this plays out judicially, I imagine that this is going to be way behind. So it's just an interesting time as we adjust to what is possible technologically.
Sure. A lot of these laws were written when the biggest form of privacy violations was a predator drilling a hole in a wall to watch other people get undressed or something like that.
Right.
Now, all of us carry these devices in our pocket every day.
Right, exactly. All right, 312-981-7200 if you have any questions about employment law, got any questions about non-disclosure agreements. We'll be chatting about that in a little bit. And about that biometric information. Oh, and actually, Jeff, I just wanted to follow up because you said something interesting in the break when we were talking. Because, yeah, people are working from home now more than ever. But when you until you think, they're not going to collect any biometric information on me. Not necessarily. If you're using their computer, they have a way to capture how often you're checking your email, how often you're logging in, that sort of stuff, right?
They can monitor employees from remote locations in all sorts of ways. Yep.
Wow. Okay. So you're not safe even there. Be aware of what's possible and not. And most importantly, know your rights. Why don't you give out that phone number again one more time, Jeffrey?
You got it. 312-374-5305.
Great stuff. All right, more with Jeffrey after the news, which is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. Let's Get Legal here, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hey, later in the program, we're going to play, I'm going to play you clips from very famous courtroom scenes in TV shows or movies, and you've got to call in and tell us which one it is. So that's going to be a lot of fun. That'll be at the end of the show. But more with Jeffrey Colwin about employment law, non-disclosure agreements, and your questions coming up after the news here on WGN. Thank you very much, Ron. John Hansen here. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We've got one more hour left in this program, and it's going to be a good one. We're going to talk about non-disclosure agreements. And what is a toxic workplace? It's a word or a phrase that's been used a lot lately. And half my brain, when I feel like I've been in a quote-unquote toxic workplace, not here at WGN, by the way, other places, you know, half the time you wonder, you're like, am I just being soft? Am I just being a baby? Workplaces aren't supposed to be all lovey-dovey? And I think we kind of get torn. So I think we're going to try and figure out exactly what a toxic workplace is and when it's maybe gone too far. And we're going to have some fun at the end of the show, too, talking about favorite TV courtroom and movie scenes that take place in the courtroom here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We're talking about a lot of different things here today. Thanks so much for joining us. If you have any questions along the way, 312-981-7200. Jeffrey Colwin, our guest from Colwin, Mashapinto and Colwin, as you heard. And Jeffrey, so you're one of the Colwins. Who's the other one?
The other Colwin is my Uncle Shelley.
Okay, well, that's nice.
Yes.
Very good. And, you know, you and I were talking before during the break, and not to put you on the spot, but you said something really profound to me, that lawyers really are public servants. And you do a lot of work with folks that may not even end up being clients, but have questions, and that's something you enjoy and want to help people out with.
Sure. I think that it's an important part of my job to help spread information. Lots of people have questions. Not everybody has a case that
right.
they want to bring. But, you know, disseminating information helps achieve the mission of making better workplaces for everybody.
Yeah, amen to that. Let's, continuing on the privacy and the cameras thing, one more story I wanted to get to before non-disclosure agreements. And that has to do with Airbnbs. And I've stayed in a lot of Airbnbs, and I have never once wondered, is there a camera somewhere in this Airbnb? Is that something I should at least be thinking about and wondering? Or would a host tell me if there was a camera? Or I guess ideally they would.
I think to be legal, they would tell you that there's a camera and you would have to consent to being in that room with the camera. But that's not always the case. I think unfortunately in this day and age, it's something you need to be aware of. I did a case once where a doctor put a secret camera in a locker room and recorded women without their knowledge and consent. How would they know? These days, you can buy devices that you can walk into a room and scan the room and look for cameras. And I think, unfortunately, that is the reality today. To protect yourself, you need to take those steps.
This one story out of South Carolina was horrifying to read about because the victims didn't know they were being recorded until an agent of the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division told them they were. So they must have captured the images from somewhere else on the internet, I don't know how, and they had to go and tell the victims, hey, this is what happened. That's horrifying.
Yeah, imagine, you know, you think you're in this space, you think that it's private, and everything that you do in private is being observed or captured by somebody else. It's a little creepy.
Should that be something we ask our Airbnb hosts, just as like a, because there's often like that back and forth where you're getting settling the check-in procedure. Is it maybe just good practice? I mean, I don't know if there's any legally binding by that, but maybe it would deter someone who was even thinking about doing it if you said, hey, by the way, I'm just curious, just making sure, are there any cameras in the house?
That would be a great way to protect yourself.
Right.
If you did that and found out later that there was a camera, they didn't tell you the truth, you should give me a call.
Right. My only worry is they'd be like, no, but why are you asking me? I'd be like, are you going to have a party? I'm like, no. I just want to just make sure that I know my rights and what's happening. All right, let's talk about non-disclosure agreements. We hear about these all the time, and a lot of private enterprises and companies have them. And I think that's pretty standard. Is it standard, actually, Jeffrey? Do a lot of companies have non-disclosure agreements? And do you have any sense of what percentage of companies have them or not?
Sure. Well, non-disclosure agreements arose out of business-to-business relationships, a manufacturer's meeting with a factory, and they want to share private information. That's typically where it came, was originated. But nowadays, I think about one-third of the U.S. workforce is subject to a non-disclosure agreement, also known as an NDA.
What about government employees? And this is where we're going to circle around with the city of Markham, which is requiring employees to sign non-disclosure agreements that broadly restrict taxpayer-funded workers, any government employee, from discussing city business, according to documents from the city in this article from the Trib. Is that a little bit more rare for town employees, for county employees, city employees, to have to sign NDAs?
It is a little rare for a government employer to have an NDA. Typically, transparency about government business is a part of our legal system.
Right.
And so it's counterintuitive to have an NDA. What type of city business is really protectable to be kept secret? Typically, those things are personal identification information for employees or ongoing criminal investigations. But city business isn't the type of thing that you would think of as being confidential or protectable by an NDA.
I imagine that where this kind of the rubber meets the road with government employees is Illinois Freedom of Information Act, right? And us, you know, as journalists, FOIAing information from employees that are taxpayer funded, we as journalists and as citizens have a right to know, to a certain extent, what's happening in our government.
Exactly. I did a case once with a woman who was not promoted because she was a woman. When the case got settled, the municipality wanted a non-disclosure agreement. We signed off. 3 weeks after the case was settled, somebody FOIA'd the agreement and it became public.
Wow. That's amazing. So even if there is an NDA signed, oftentimes the FOIA itself will reveal what happened.
True. The other thing really for government employees is that everybody's got First Amendment rights. You have the right to free speech. You can't have an employer restricting your speech in certain ways. And so I think that both of those present challenges for the enforceability of NDAs in a public employment context.
What should someone do? I mean, should someone take an NDA if they're being asked to sign something at work, an NDA, even if it's like standard boilerplate language? Is it advisable to have someone else take a look at what it is? Is that even allowed? Can I, like, if I have a lawyer, a family lawyer or something, or someone like you, can I just bring the NDA for someone else to even look at?
I would think that any employer would allow you an opportunity to have somebody take a look at it. Here in Illinois, in 2019, we have the Illinois Workplace Transparency Act, which went into effect. And what that act basically says is that NDAs are unenforceable unless they meet certain conditions. And one of them is providing notice about what can and what cannot be kept confidential.
Interesting. So other than that, though, they're unenforceable in many ways.
Unless they're mutually agreed to.
Okay. All right. Unless they're mutually agreed to.
Exactly.
All right. That's the world of NDAs. We're going to talk about toxic workplaces after this here on WGN. All right. I've got about 10 minutes left here with Jeffrey Colwin of Colwin, Mashapinto & Colwin. And Jeffrey, really quickly, I want to reiterate to folks, because they can reach out to you and the folks at your office and what you do. So what sorts of people are you, do you help out? Is it mainly employees? Like, what would be a reason someone would want to give you a call if they're listening right now?
Sure. I think that if you have a problem or a concern relating your employment or a business dispute or the violation of your civil rights, you should give me a call.
So privacy rights fall into that too?
Sure.
Even if it doesn't have anything to do with employment.
Even if it doesn't have anything to do with employment.
Yeah, because we bring you on as an employment expert, but your range is broader than that as well.
I focus a lot of my practice on employment law, but there's a lot of things that spring out of that, such as privacy rights and whistleblowers, for example, things of that nature.
Have you always been interested in that line of work, or is that something that after you started law, you sort of, meandered your way into it?
I found when I first became a lawyer that people's jobs are really important to them. It defines who they are. It gives them a sense of dignity. And I've just always been drawn to helping people sort of fulfill, self-achieve their career goals.
And do you think that in the last 10 or 15 years, the idea of what a workplace is and how it relates to me individually and my happiness has changed enough that, in fact, a lot of people are reaching out to you now because they are taking stock in what their job means to them on the whole?
I think the transformation that has occurred over the last few years has been the raising of awareness of what should and what should not take place in the workplace. And I think that benefits everybody.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 312-981-7200, by the way, if you have any specific questions. All right, let's talk about toxic workplaces. And I think a lot of people will say, well, you know a toxic workplace when you see it. But I don't think it's as cut and dry as that, Jeffrey. Because I think sometimes you might have a toxic, quote-unquote, boss. But that doesn't mean the whole workplace is toxic. Sometimes you may have employees that you disagree with. Does that make it a toxic workplace? So is there a definition that you, I mean, obviously it's not a legal term, but if someone says to you, I work at a toxic workplace, what elements do you think really contribute to that?
I think the key things in a toxic, that would define a toxic workplace would be a place where employees are not treated with dignity or respect. Doesn't necessarily mean it's unlawful. Lots of employment actions are unjust or unfair. But when you have a workplace where employees are not being treated with dignity and respect, it becomes toxic in that it grates on you. It makes it hard to come to work every day.
Yeah, because I think that's a hard line to navigate because I think there's this generational shift, right? I mean, let's be perfectly honest. A lot of the newer folks in the workplace, I'm an older millennial, but young millennials and Gen Z, they like a good workplace culture. They like to fight for it. They want a forward-thinking company a lot of times. They want their, PTO to be matching. They want, to have bosses that are not necessarily friends, but friendly to them. And a lot of people might roll their eyes at it, but I think that a younger generation is making the workplace better for a lot of people who would just put their head down in the sand and say, well, whatever, it's a job.
I would agree with that. I think that the raising of awareness is what keeps everybody on the right side of the law and helps keep workplaces from becoming toxic. That's bad for everybody if it's toxic.
So let's talk about this Jeff Bezos story. 21 current and former employees of Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin claim that the space company is a toxic workplace. That's according to an essay posted on Thursday, led by former Blue Origin head of employment communications, Alexander Abrams. The essay claims that the company pushes workers to sign strict non-disclosure agreements, like we talked about, stifles internal feedback, disregards safety concerns, and creates a sexist environment for women. And it gives examples of alleged sexual harassment. Now, that has crossed the line, if those allegations are correct. Now, that crosses the line from something that is not legally in the realm of something you can talk about to actually things that are illegal, right? Like, once you start talking about safety concerns and sexist environments, that's where someone like you would get involved, correct?
Sure. Typically, non-disclosure agreements are unenforceable against things that employees would report that would be unlawful to the government or to law enforcement. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to see that, especially even a company, because you would think that these tech companies, they're usually like the forefront of like having the pool table in the break room and stuff like that. I think it just goes to show that even companies that claim to be these forward-thinking companies still can have blind spots, Jeff.
For sure. And think about that, what you just said. 21 employees were a part of that letter, but only one was brave enough to sign her name.
Well, that's amazing. Let's go to the phone lines, by the way, 312-981-7200. And we're going to go to Andrew in Mount Prospect. Andrew, how are you doing here this evening?
I'm doing great. This is a great topic, and I'm thank you so much for taking the call.
Yeah, of course.
So,
go ahead.
I have a tremendous employee, and I'm underscoring tremendous. He is a tremendous employee. And it's a dress code issue.
Okay.
And I don't know how to say this. I don't know how to say. He wears his pants down below and you see his underwear
exposed,
and I don't know how to handle this.
So
he's a great employee.
Right, and he's an employee, so you're not just saying anyone that does that on the street is wrong. You're not going into that world. You're just saying that from an employer perspective, that is could be harmful for the workplace.
We have a business casual atmosphere. Now, okay, so he is a freelance, not an employee, and I don't know if that makes a difference.
So is your question how to enforce it, how to enforce a dress code the right way?
Yeah, and how to say something. I'm just at a loss for words.
Interesting. Jeffrey, what do you I mean, would it depend on what the dress code situation is? Are there laws in Illinois about what can or can't be dress code? What do you think about a situation? I know that's got to be difficult to navigate for employers.
For sure, and that's a great question. I think the best practice to use in a situation like that is to have a reasonable basis for having the dress code in the first place, communicate the dress code to everybody that it would affect, and treat everybody the same with respect to that dress code.
Andrew, do you have a dress code like written down that all the employees or people that work with you know about?
We do. It's in our handbook, but I guess you could say that it's my fault because, again, he's freelance. He's not on the payroll. He comes and goes when we need him. But when he's in the building, everybody comes to me. I need to somehow get around this.
Interesting. Yeah, Jeff, I think that having a respectful conversation is probably the first place to start, yeah?
Sure. And it doesn't matter if that person is an employee or a contractor, Andrew. It sounds like you are the employer. You get to set the rules as long as they're fair and reasonable and apply to everybody equally.
Andrew, I got to say that I appreciate that you're entering the conversation from a point of, hey, this is a really good worker, and you're just trying to enforce, you know, for particular reasons. And I just wanted to ask you as a quick aside, has hiring been really tough? You don't have to tell me what line of work you do, but I imagine that this new world is tough for employers as well.
We can't believe it. We've been looking for customer service people. And for the last 3 months, and we've gotten 2 applications, which is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that rectifies itself or gets a little bit better in the next couple months, because while the employees do have a lot of power now, there should be some sort of balance. And of course, we don't want to impact small businesses, local businesses like yours. Well, Andrew, it sounds like you've got a groundwork to start having that conversation respectfully, okay?
Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, sounds good. I think that when you hear someone like Andrew, who just seems like a really, I mean, I don't know, but he would call a reasonable employer, you know, those are workplaces where, you know, not every boss is out to demean employees, right? I think we sometimes have this mantra that like, oh, the boss, forget the boss, all that. There are a lot of great bosses out there that really do want to have those respectful conversations.
I think so. I think Andrew's question illustrates the fact that the awareness has been raised that you have to treat people with a certain amount of respect.
That's great. 312-981-7200, probably going to be out of time, but if you do have a question, we can write it down for Jeffrey afterwards. So, Jeffrey, once again, I wanted to just have you make sure, because you were so generous to give us an hour today. You gave us cookies, for goodness sake. Why don't you give out the phone number again where people can reach you with any more of these great questions?
Yes, you can call me directly, 312-374-5305.
It's radio, so say it one more time, and do it in a really great radio voice.
312-374-5305.
That was very good.
Thank
That's
you.
Very good. Do you guys have a website, too, you want to direct people to as well?
Absolutely. KMKLawLLP.com is the website for my firm, and I have a blog, JeffreyColwin.com.
And what I always tell people, if they can't figure out the website, just Google it. Google Jeffrey Cole when you'll find the website, phone number, everything like that.
Google me.
Google him. Jeffrey, it really has been great to chat with you, and I know we'll talk again soon because, as we've talked about, employment law ain't going anywhere, and we've got a lot of interesting cases in the near future. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Well, thanks for having me, John, and thanks for helping to raise awareness about these important issues.
For sure. All right, till next time, we'll chat, and now time for the news here on WGN.